Time for Michigan's newest sports talk show, Mitt Madness.
And here he goes, defense win championship.
Michigan sports talk from here in Battle Creek. The latest stories, the biggest games, all across the Mitten State.
That's not something to play with.
Streaming live and on demand on the 95.3 WBCK app. Your host, Dejon Hughes.
Good morning on this Saturday morning. Welcome back into another episode of Mitten Madness here on 95.3 WBCK. This week is a special week. We do not have Coach's Corner this week, so that means you get a special two-hour episode from me all about what's happening in Michigan sports. So that means get buckled up because we're going to talk about a ton on this Saturday morning. We're going to dive into what's happening with the Lions, talk about their last game and the game they have coming up. We're also going to talk Michigan, Michigan State, and Western on the football gridirons and what's happening in their respective conferences and their respective schedules and what's looking forward to them over the next couple of weeks as we get ready for the playoff and bowl season. Then we're going to talk about the college football playoff bowl season and some other college football relevant news. We'll hit on the Pistons, the amazing start they've had to the season, and how they can continue to have that success and land exactly where they want to land in the top three of the Eastern Conference and make a push for the Eastern Conference final, if not the NBA finals. Then we'll touch in on the Red Wings, who are doing their thing inside of LCA as well. Little Caesars Arena has been absolutely bumping over the last couple of months as the Red Wings are off to a great start, and so are the Pistons. It's a great time to be a Detroit professional sports fan as everything is rolling in the way that they have been asking for years and years to come. And then we'll get onto the hardwood in the college realm. We'll talk Michigan and Michigan State, probably the Big Ten overall, and what the country looks like for basketball as the college basketball season gets started. We'll have other sports updates, most likely college, etc., around the state. Before we get into our picks to end things out, it's another beautiful Saturday. Tons of sports going down this weekend. Had a pretty good sports weekend last week. I can ask for the same thing again this week. I'm pumped for what's going to come down. Obviously, Michigan's going to have a big road test this weekend as they look to get to that game against Ohio State with just one conference loss, still giving them a shot at not only the Big Ten championship game, but a spot in the college football playoff. Packers had a tough loss Monday night, but of course, we can always bounce back. Michigan basketball, I cannot wait to talk about them in a few moments. But getting this thing started the way we always do, talking about the Detroit Lions. This past weekend, they took on the Washington Commanders, and this game was pretty much over before it started. The Commanders were without their star quarterback, Jaden Daniels, who most recently broke his arm, and his season is officially over. Meanwhile, the Detroit Lions were healthy and came into this game ready to destruct and destroy, because that's exactly what they did. 44-22, let's look at how it happened. Jared Goff, 25-33 for 320 passing yards and three touchdowns. Jahmyr Gibbs goes for 15 carries, 142 rushing yards, and two touchdowns. Jameson Williams led the receivers, six receptions on 119 yards and a TD. Brian Branch had 1.5 sacks. And, of course, Jack Campbell, 9 tackles, 4 of them being solo. The Commanders on the other side, Marcus Mariota didn't play terrible, just not as good as Jared Goff. 16 of 22, 213 passing yards and 2 touchdowns. And then running was a totally different story for the Commanders. Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt leading the rushing category, 30 yards on 11 carries. Treylon Burks had 58 receiving yards on 3 receptions. No sacks for the Commanders, and Bobby Wagner had 9 tackles, 6 of them being solo. The Lions outgained the Commanders 546-288. No turnovers in this game on either side, but a whopping 30 first downs for the Lions in comparison to just 14 for the Commanders. 8 penalties for the Commanders for 61 yards, 3 for 1 yard against the Lions. That's like impossible. How do you get 3 penalties for? You know what? I'm not asking any questions. 5 for 10 on third down for the Lions, 2 for 10 for Washington. They both went 100% on fourth down, 2 for 2 for the Lions, 3 for 3 for the Commanders. The Commanders were a perfect 3 for 3 in the red zone. The Lions went 4 for 6, so this game could have looked even worse than it actually did for the Commanders. Looking at the scoring plays, Jahmyr Gibbs goes for 14 or catches a 14-yard pass from Jared Goff for his first touchdown of the day. Matt Gay responds with a field goal. Then Amon-Ra St. Brown had a 9-yard touchdown reception. Jahmyr Gibbs starts the second quarter with a 13-yard touchdown run. Chris Rodriguez Jr. had a 1-yard touchdown run as well. And then Jake Bates closes out the first half with a 22-yard field goal. Lions lead 25-10 after two. Jameson Williams caught another 14-yard touchdown pass. Excuse me, his first and only 14-yard touchdown reception from Jared Goff. Deebo Samuel had a 4-yard touchdown reception from Marcus Mariota. And Jake Bates with another field goal at the end of the third quarter from 28. 35-16 after three frames. Jahmyr Gibbs, a 43-yard touchdown run, pretty much icing the game at the beginning of the fourth quarter. Then Ben Sinnott had a 4-yard touchdown reception to cut the lead to 41-22. Jake Bates finished things off with a 48-yard field goal with 4.5 minutes left in the fourth quarter. Lions did more than enough to cover their spread. The over-under hit, and of course, they hit on the money line. The Lions looked like the Lions have for most of the season, dominant. Their offense could not be stopped if their offense wanted to be stopped. Like, literally, the offense could have went out there and probably played as bad as they had played all season long, and they still would have had a ton of success against the Commanders. Jared Goff only not connecting on 8 of his pass attempts. Insane. 320 yards, 3 TDs. That is a Jared Goff game. And then when you get Jahmyr Gibbs actually in the motion and he's allowed to get his feet under him and find a groove, he can run over just about any defense in the NFL. 142 yards on 15 carries. That's just under 10 yards a carry. And he scored twice. Pay dirt 2 times in one game. It doesn't happen all the time, but when you get it done, it makes it so much easier to win a game. And that's what you had from the Lions this weekend. They had everybody firing on all cylinders. And of course, their defense showed up to play once again. There wasn't a question in this game of the Lions ever really losing this game. It looks like the lowest percentage or win probability percentage they had for the game was obviously toward the beginning, and it was about 63%. But once they scored, this game was pretty much over. So what do the Lions have coming up this weekend? Well, they're going to be in primetime this weekend on Sunday Night Football, so you can expect to hear that right here on WBCK. But NBC and Peacock will have the game as well. The 6-3 Lions will be going on the road to take on the 7-2 Philadelphia Eagles. The Lions are 3-2 on the road. The Eagles are 3-1 at home. Not going to dive too far deep into this game, but this is a game for the top of the NFC. The winner of this game will be the number one seed in the NFC. Jalen Hurts, Saquon Barkley, Devontae Smith, A.J. Brown, we know what their offense brings to the table. They have been great all year as well. Only 2 blemishes on their record, 1 to a divisional opponent in the Giants, and the other to the Broncos. The Broncos, a playoff team. The Giants right now are on the cusp of being a playoff team. On the other side, you have the Lions, who have a loss to a divisional opponent in Minnesota. Not currently a playoff team, but when you lose to a divisional opponent, it's a little bit different because of the rivalries that exist there. They have a blemish to the Kansas City Chiefs, who are a playoff team at the moment. And, of course, the other loss is to divisional opponent the Packers, who are currently a playoff team as well. So the Lions are right in the mix of this thing, and a win here puts them in fantastic category. Now the question is, will guys like Lane Johnson, Landon Dickerson, Cam Jurgens be back for the Eagles? Will Penei Sewell and Taylor Decker, Graham Glasgow, decide to play for the Lions? Offensive line, defensive line, we say it all the time, football games are won in the trenches, but this is a perfect example of a game that will be won in the trenches. Whichever offensive and defensive line plays better, that includes pass protection, run game, getting out in the screens, pulling, and knowing and picking up on the blitz packages. But then on the opposite side, blitzing well, getting pressures, getting sacks, TFLs, all of this matters. Holding the edge on the contain, whichever set of linemen is going to be able to play better will win this game. Now, what I will say is there's a possibility that this game ends up having a situation where the Lions defensive line is playing far better than the Eagles defensive line, but the Eagles offensive line is playing far better than the Lions offensive line. So we're almost in a stalemate, like what we saw with the Eagles and the Packers on Monday, where you get a heroic, I mean, that game was disgusting. 13-7. I don't ever want to watch something that bad again, but in turn, Sunday Night Football with the Lions and the Eagles could be the very same thing. If you're not able to get an advantage at the line of scrimmage, no one is going to have a ton of success in this game. But in the same token, both of these teams could play well across the board, and we could see another absolute shootout go down between the Lions and another team, especially a team with as high-powered of an offense as the Philadelphia Eagles. I obviously didn't say I was going to say too much about this game. It's because I'll be doing this in the picks later on in the show. So stick around to find out who I will be picking to win this game. But we're about to get ready to go into the break. When we come back, we're going to have to get into the gridiron in the college realm. We'll be talking about the Western Michigan Broncos, Michigan State Spartans, and the Michigan Wolverines. When we get back with more Mid-Madness on 95.3 WBCK.
95.3 WBCK.
You.
Welcome back into Mid-Madness on 95.3 WBCK. We're stepping onto the gridiron in the college ranks. The Western Michigan Broncos will get us kicked off, but we will also talk about the Michigan State Spartans and the Michigan Wolverines. First, let's talk about the Western Michigan Broncos and their football team. They won a game earlier this week in the MAC conference that put them in a territory they haven't been in since 2016. The Michigan State Broncos are currently first in the MAC conference. They are 5-1. Central Michigan sits at 4-2. Ohio sits at 4-2. Toledo, 4-2. Buffalo, 4-2. Miami of Ohio, 4-2. Ball State, 3-2. So as of right now, Western Michigan University has pretty much locked their spot into the MAC Conference Championship. All they have to do is win their next game. Their next game is next Tuesday, 11-18, against Northern Illinois on the road, 7 p.m. on ESPN2. Their most recent game was against the Ohio Bobcats. Would like to give a few moments to say thoughts and prayers out to the family of Marshawn Nealon. Thoughts and prayers out to Western Michigan University and the entire football team, along with the Dallas Cowboys, as they mourn the loss of Marshawn Nealon, a former player at Western Michigan University, was currently playing for the Dallas Cowboys, and was a Grand Rapids native that went to Godwin Heights High School. They took his jersey out to be an honorary captain at the beginning of this game. Coach came out wearing his jersey. They did a special tribute, did a moment of silence, and then even painted his number 99 on both sides of the football field. And then they went out and played for him exactly as they said they would. What a game this was. Western would come out with a 17-13 victory, dropping the Bobcats to 6-4 and 4-2 in the MAC. Improving Western to 6-4 and 5-1 in the MAC. Looking at how this game went down, Parker Navarro, 8 of 19 for 70 yards and an interception. He also had 18 carries for 105 rushing yards and a TD. Mason Williams, 2 receptions for 20 yards. And Jack Fries had 11 tackles, 8 of them being solo. Brock Lowry doing his thing as a dual threat quarterback for the Broncos. 9 of 14 for 126 passing yards 18 carries for 92 rushing yards and a TD. Tariq Williams had one reception for 71 yards, and this was the wildest reception of all time. It was a screen that he caught behind the line of scrimmage. He was able to break through, find some space, get running. Then all of a sudden, he ran into a swarm of Bobcats. And then all of a sudden, he made a few moves, and he was out in the open and was running away. Reversed field and was brought down just a few yards away from the end zone before Western was able to punch it in. And then, of course, take the lead late in this game. Western outgained the Bobcats 336 to 287. One turnover for the Bobcats, 16 to 15 in first downs in favor of the Broncos. Three penalties for 20 yards for the Bobcats, 2 for 10 for Western. 3 for 11 on third down for the Bobcats. 0 for 8 were the Broncos. 2 for 3 on fourth down for Ohio. 1 for 3 for Western. And Western still able to come out with a home victory. Palmer Domski had a 46-yard field goal to open up the game. Parker Navarro, his 2-yard touchdown to run, put the Bobcats up 7-3. Brock Lowry had a touchdown run in the third quarter. There was no score between the first and the third quarter. Brock Lowry put the Broncos up 10-7. And then Seha Bangura got the fourth quarter started with a 3-yard touchdown run for the Bobcats, putting them back up 13-10. And then Jalen Buckley had a 3-yard touchdown run with 13:43 left in the fourth to win this game 17-13. What a MAC action game. So now the Broncos are staring down an opportunity to play in the MAC championship game. Only thing standing between them are the Northern Illinois Huskies and the Eastern Michigan Eagles. So we'll find out over the next couple of weeks if they will be going on to play in the MAC championship or if there will be chaos at the top of the MAC conference. With that being said, we're bumping over to the Big Ten conference, and we're going to talk about Michigan State, who had a tough game against Minnesota this past weekend. They did decide to go ahead and start Alessio Milivojevic, and he went for 20 of 28, 311 passing yards and one touchdown. Elijah Tuitoliver had 11 carries for 127 rushing yards. Rodney Bullitt Jr., 102 receiving yards on 4 receptions and a touchdown. Isaac Smith had a sack. And Nakai Martinez, 10 tackles, 7 of them being solo. Minnesota, on the other hand, Mr. Drake Lindsey, 26 of 39 for 197 passing yards. Fame Ijeboy had 17 carries for 108 yards and a touchdown. Javon Tracy goes for 61 yards on 7 receptions. Anthony Smith had 1.5 sacks, and Coy Parrish had 10 tackles, 5 of them being solo. Michigan State outgained Minnesota 467 to 301. No turnovers in this game. Michigan State had 19 first downs to 18 for Minnesota. 10 penalties for 96 yards against the Spartans. 2 penalties for 8 yards for Minnesota. 6 for 15 were the Gophers on third down. 5 for 15, Michigan State. 0 for 1 on fourth down for the Spartans. Just thinking and looking at those stats, you can imagine that maybe Michigan State won this game. Maybe Minnesota won this game. There's really no way to tell because of how lopsided a lot of these statistical categories are. But let's take a look at the scoring plays and how things went down. Fame Ijeboy, 1-yard touchdown run to open things up in the first quarter. Minnesota led 7-0 after one. Brady Denneberg put them up 10-0 at the beginning of the second, and then they took that lead into halftime, 10-0 at half. Here come the Spartans. Rodney Bullard Jr., 71-yard pass reception from Alessio Milivojevic to put Michigan State on the board, 10-7. Then the beginning of the fourth quarter is when all chaos broke. Martin Connington, 34-yard field goal to tie the game. Brandon Tullis, 1-yard touchdown run to put Michigan State up 7. And then Drake Lindsey bounces back with 29 seconds left in the fourth quarter to tie the game. They go to overtime. Michigan State gets the ball first. They're held to a field goal from 36 yards. And then Drake Lindsey finishes the game out with a 3-yard touchdown run. Minnesota beats Michigan State 23-20, effectively ending Michigan State's season. Now, I said effectively because it is not over. They are not bowl ineligible. But they do have 6 losses, so their next loss does make them ineligible to make a bowl game. They have Penn State on the docket. Now, for some people, they think that this game should be maybe closer than the books are telling, but it's hard to say because Penn State has had some success the last couple of weeks. They're coming in 3-6, 0-6 in the Big Ten, just like Michigan State. This game is 3:30 p.m. on CBS. Drew Aller no longer playing for Penn State as he was hurt. They're without James Franklin as they fired him, but they have losses to Indiana by just 3 points, a loss to Iowa by just 1 point, a loss to Northwestern by just 1 point. They did get demolished by Ohio State. They lost to UCLA by just 5. Michigan State, on the other hand, a 3-point loss to Minnesota, demolished by Indiana, demolished by USC. They got a 11-point loss to Nebraska, an 11-point loss to Michigan. It's hard to say that Michigan State is going to be able to compete in this game. ESPN thinks so as well. 79.2% chance for Penn State, just 20.8 for Michigan. Penn State is 7.5-point favorites and a negative 290 on the money line. I think Penn State wins this weekend as they've been inching closer to success over the last couple of weeks, making Michigan State ineligible for bowl season, but they could ruin Iowa's season next week. So we'll talk about that when we get there. But now it's time to talk about Michigan. The Wolverines, they're in a very different territory than the Spartans. They were able to take down Purdue in a very close game as well. Michigan wins 21-16. Bryce Underwood, 13 of 22, 145 yards and an interception. Ryan Brown, 133 passing yards, 19 of 24 and a touchdown. The running backs were the name of the game. Malachi Thomas, 15 carries, 68 yards. Jordan Marshall, 185 rushing yards, 25 carries, and 3 touchdowns. Mark Jackson, the third, 6 receptions, 58 receiving yards. Zach Marshall, 58 receiving yards on 3 receptions. Monty Powell had 1.5 sacks. Derek Moore had 2 sacks. Taj Rael had 13 tackles, 11 of them being solo. Ernest Hausman, 11 tackles, 8 of them on the solo end. 398 to 276 yardage in favor of Michigan. 2 turnovers to 1 in favor of Purdue. 20 first downs to 18 in favor of Michigan. 4 penalties each. 30 and 32 yards, Purdue and Michigan respectively. 5 of 12 on third down, 6 for 11, Purdue and Michigan respectively. 1 for 2 on fourth down for Purdue. Jordan Marshall opened the game up with a 54-yard touchdown run, only score of the first quarter. Antonio Harris had a 2-yard run to tie things up. Jordan Marshall bounced back with a 3-yard touchdown run right before halftime to put Michigan up 14-7. Spencer Porath had a 50-yard field goal in the third, 14-10 after 3. Jordan Marshall bounces back with his third touchdown of the day from 9 yards out, putting Michigan up 21-10. Malachi Thomas caught a 5-yard touchdown pass from Ryan Brown. They failed on a 2-point conversion. Michigan wins 21-16. That improves Michigan to 5-1 in the conference, 7-2 overall. Purdue 0-7, 2-8, or 0-7 in the conference, 2-8 overall. Michigan has Northwestern coming up next. Obviously, they're trying to beat Northwestern, beat Maryland, so they can play Ohio State. And the winner of that game may go to the Big Ten Championship. A lot could happen. Michigan has a 79% chance to win, 21% from Northwestern. This game will be played at Wrigley Field in Chicago. Michigan comes in as 11.5-point favorites as Northwestern is 3-3 in the Big Ten, 5-4. This game is on Fox at noon, also here on WBCK. I have no problem with Michigan winning this game. I think Northwestern will come out and give them a fight, but Michigan knows what's on the line, and they got to win the next two to set up that big matchup with Michigan State. We'll be back after the break to talk more college football, the playoff, and bowl season with more Mid Madness on 95.3 WBCK.
95.3 WBCK.
Welcome back into Mid Madness on 95.3 WBCK. It's time for us to talk a little bit more college football. We're going to take a look at early college football playoff ranks and also take a look at some teams that may be ineligible for bowl games and obviously those teams and what they need to do to make sure they can get a bowl game. First, looking at the college football playoff, the first round buys at the moment are going to Ohio State, Indiana, Texas A&M, and Alabama. That obviously will change over the next couple of weeks as conference championships happen and teams move around the polls. Only four of these teams can get that bye, and I'll tell you, there's no way that two teams from the same conference receive a bye based off of how they look at the polls. First-round matchups at the moment. The Oregon Ducks would take on the Texas Tech Red Raiders, and the winner would play number one, Ohio State. That is the 9-8 matchup. The 5-12 matchup is the Memphis Tigers against the Georgia Bulldogs, as the winner would play number four, Alabama. The 11-6 matchup, the Virginia Cavaliers against the Ole Miss Rebels. Number three, Texas A&M would get the winner of that game. The 10-7 matchup, Notre Dame Fighting Irish against the number seven BYU-ranked Cougars. The winner gets number two-ranked Indiana. Looking early on, Big Ten gets three teams in. The SEC has four teams in. Big 12 has two teams in. The ACC gets one. You got your Power Five in Memphis, or your Group of Five in Memphis. And then Notre Dame squeezes in on that at-large bid. This is looking like an interesting field. Like I said, tons is going to change over the next couple of weeks. The Big Ten is one of those conferences that could look drastically different. Say Ohio State loses one of their games, maybe to Michigan. Then Indiana's the number one team, not only in the Big Ten, but in the country. And then there's this crazy like 3-4-5-way tie at the top of the Big Ten for second place. So then they have to decide who is going to be in the Big Ten championship game. And then the winner of that game will most likely get the bye. But then the loser may even miss out completely on the college football playoff, depending on who the loser is. Or maybe even a scenario where Ohio State gets in without a bye because they lost and they were no longer in that top four, and they have to play through the rankings. It's crazy the way these things could shake out. You can see the same thing happening in the SEC. Georgia, Alabama, Texas A&M. It is crazy. Ole Miss atop of the SEC. Tons of teams still fighting for those top spots. Tons of teams still wanting to play in that SEC championship game. There's only a couple of weeks until we find out who plays in what championship games and how that shakes up the rankings. But I'll tell you, looking at four SEC teams, looking at three Big Ten teams, maybe both of those conferences lose one. But I'll tell you, the SEC is probably losing one of those teams for sure. Now that we talked a little bit about the college football playoff, let's just go around the country and look at some of these conferences and how their rankings have them on the season, so that we are able to see who will be in a championship or who will be in a bowl game and who won't be. So overall, looking at first, Navy, or in the American, Navy's going to make a bowl game. South Florida will make a bowl game. Tulane, North Texas, Memphis will all make a bowl game for sure. East Carolina is right on the cusp of making a bowl game at 6-3. Their next win guarantees it. Army and Temple, Rice all have five wins and right on the cusp. Two wins guarantees them a bowl game. Florida Atlantic and UTSA currently have three losses. They have five losses. So two more losses knocks them out of contention for a bowl game. Meanwhile, UAB is right on the cusp. They got to win their next three games or they are for sure out. Tulsa and Charlotte have already lost their chances at playing in a bowl game. Looking at the Atlantic Coast Conference, Georgia Tech, Virginia, Pittsburgh, SMU, Louisville, Miami will all for sure play in bowl games. Wake Forest and Cal are just one win away from securing their bowl game. Duke and NC State are two wins away from their bowl game. And then you have Cal with four losses, along with NC State, who both have chances of still getting a bowl game. North Carolina, sitting at 4-5, has to win their next three games. If they lose two of those three, they're out of contention as well. Florida State sits at 4-5. They can't lose two more games. But Syracuse, Boston College, and Stanford are already eliminated from bowl game contention. In the Big 12, Texas Tech, BYU, Cincinnati, Houston, and Utah have all secured bowl games. Arizona, Arizona State, TCU, Iowa State all have six wins. One more guarantees their bowl game. Baylor and Kansas both have five wins. Two more guarantees them a bowl game. Meanwhile, Kansas State and UCF are at 4-5. Two more losses knocks them out of contention. Meanwhile, 3-7, 1-8, Colorado and Oklahoma State are not playing in a bowl game this year. Big Ten, Indiana, Ohio State, USC, Oregon, Michigan have all locked in, or Nebraska have all locked in bowl games. Then you have Iowa, Minnesota, Washington, Illinois all sitting at 6-3, knocking on the door. And then Northwestern knocking on the door at 5-4. UCLA, Wisconsin, Michigan State, Penn State all have to avoid their next loss because their next one knocks them out of contention. Purdue already not going to a bowl game. In Conference USA, Kennesaw State, Jacksonville State, Western Kentucky, and Missouri State will most likely be going to bowl games. Liberty, Delaware, Louisiana, and Florida International all on the bubble. UTEP, New Mexico, Middle Tennessee, and Sam Houston all defeated from bowl game contention. Notre Dame and UConn both looking like they will be in bowl games this year. So far, no teams in the MAC have guaranteed a bowl game, but Akron, Eastern Michigan, Northern Illinois, Bowling Green, and UMass have all guaranteed they won't be playing in a bowl game. Looking in the Mountain West, San Diego State, Hawaii, UNLV, all going to bowl games. Boise State, New Mexico, Fresno State at six wins on the outside. 5-4 for Utah State, 4-5 for Wyoming, 3-6, 3-6, 2-7, 1-8 out of bowl game contention for San Jose State, Air Force, Colorado State, and Nevada. In the Pac-12, neither one of them is going to a bowl game between Oregon State and Washington. SEC, Texas A&M, Bama, Georgia, Ole Miss, Texas, Vanderbilt, Oklahoma have all locked in bowl games. Tennessee, Missouri, right on the edge along with LSU, and Kentucky and Mississippi State. Meanwhile, Florida, Auburn, South Carolina, and I have some work to do while Arkansas is on the outside looking in. In the Sun Belt, James Madison and Southern Miss have guaranteed bowl games. Coastal Carolina, Old Dominion, Troy, Arkansas State, Georgia Southern, Marshall, App State, all right on the cusp. Meanwhile, Georgia State and Southern Alabama on the outside looking in. UL Monroe, Louisiana, and Texas State right on the cusp. That is the breakdown for what might be going down postseason college football. We'll be back after the break to talk about our Pistons, who have started off well this year, with more Mid Madness on 95.3 WBCK.
95.3 WBCK.
Ford.
95.3 WBCK.
Welcome back into Mid Madness on 95.3 WBCK. We're back from the break, and it's time to talk on the hardwood again, this time in the NBA. We're talking about the Detroit Pistons. They have started the season better than anybody could have imagined that they would start the season. They are 10-2. They're not only first in the Central Division, they are first in the entire NBA. They're the best team in the NBA at 10-2 at the moment, and they are currently riding a 8-game win streak. 8 in a row for the Pistons. Their last loss came to the Cavaliers. one of their two losses this year, the other one to the Bulls. They just got back at the Bulls the other night. They beat them 124-113, and they didn't just beat the Bulls that night. They beat them without basically their entire team. When we look at the box score from this game, we got DMPs from Jalen Duren, but also Isaac Jones. You also didn't have Jaden Ivey. You didn't have Cade Cunningham either. I mean, a lot of the starters, no Tobias Harris either in this game, did not play. Duncan Robinson, Paul Reed, Ronald Holland II, Javonte Green, and Danis Jenkins were the starters for this game. You had Tolu Smith, Wendell Moore Jr., Bobby Klitman, Caris LeVert, and Chaz Lanier come off of the bench. Duncan Robinson goes for 23, Paul Reed 28, Danis Jenkins 18. Ron Holland had 9 to join Javonte Green. Tolu Smith had 6 along with Bobby Klitman and Chaz Lanier off the bench. Wendell Moore Jr. had 2. Caris LeVert pours in 17. And the Pistons win 124-113, which is impressive to be able to go out and beat any team without your starting majority of your starting lineup and a good bunch of your bench as well. The Pistons proving that they're deep, going and beating another very good team. The Bulls have definitely had their worries. They're 1-4 on the road, 6-5 now after starting the season 6-0. They were the last undefeated team left, and it's been a struggle since they lost their first game. They got 21 from Matas Bazulis. They got 20 from Kevin Herter, 15 from Isaac Okoro. Vucevic held to just 6 points on the day. Josh Giddey didn't play due to a sprained ankle. Ayu Dosunmu gives them 12 off the bench. Javon Carter, another 11 from his spot off the bench. Trey Jones poured in 11 at his starting spot at point guard. But realistically, the Pistons had this one shooting 55.6% from the field, 43.3% from three, only 19 turnovers and 44 rebounds, 47.7% for the Bulls, 36.4% from three, 21 turnovers and 44 rebounds. Pistons, I mean, look great. They're now split 1-1 in this regular season series. They won't see each other again until January 7th at Little Caesars Arena, and then once again at the United Center in Chicago on February 21st. Meanwhile, like I said, the Pistons are riding that wave right now of wins. They have wins over the Magic, the Mavericks, Grizzlies, Jazz, Nets, 76ers, Wizards, and Bulls since their last game. They will play the 76ers. Well, they just played the 76ers again last night, excuse me, as you're listening to this. And then looking ahead at the rest of their schedule and what they have in front of them. This time, they're playing the 76ers at home at Little Caesars Arena. They were able to go out and beat them on the road at the Xfinity Mobile Center, 111-108, getting 26-11 from Cade Cunningham. They also had 26 rebounds from Jalen Duren that night. They needed 46-11 from Cade Cunningham on Monday to take down the Wizards, 137-135 in OT. Also a huge clutch three-pointer from Danis Jenkins in that game out of the corner to tie that game and send it to overtime, where Cade was able to handle the rest. Like I said, they have the 76ers at home last night. And then on Monday, they have the struggling Pacers, who are dealing with a plethora of injuries coming to town before they head on the road in the middle of next week. They'll take on Atlanta, and then they have Milwaukee, Indiana, and Boston all on the road before they return home again the day after Thanksgiving. Black Friday football, basketball going down for the Pistons at Little Caesars Arena. They will play Boston on ESPN on the 26th, the day before Thanksgiving. So tons of good basketball action for Pistons fans around the Thanksgiving holiday. But like I mentioned, they're currently on an 8-game win streak. I mean, maybe their first loss, maybe the streak ends against Milwaukee. Maybe, but they've had some struggles this year as well. Boston has had struggles. They've already beaten Orlando this year. So maybe Miami could possibly be their first test. But if it's Miami, they're going in on a 14-game win streak. There's no guarantee that Miami would be able to shut them down either. All of the momentum that they have rolling so far in this season has only continued to build. And when you're young with a coach that believes you, a front office that's making the right moves, and a fan base that is behind you and has been waiting to stand and cheer loudly since 2003, you can get a lot of things done. The Pistons are literally living that out right in front of our eyes. They take the energy from the crowd. They see everything being said about them on social media. They see the way that the city of Detroit backs them up. They have a superstar in Cade Cunningham, also known as Cade Icewood, that wants to be in Detroit and play in Detroit. You have Jaden Ivey, whose mother played for the Detroit Shock. He wants to be here in Detroit. Jalen Duren has turned into a prototypical Detroit center. He looks like a bigger Ben Wallace. He reminds us of the Samson, the Bill Laimbeer, and the Dennis Rodmans of back in the day. He is playing the best basketball from a Detroit center that we maybe have ever seen. And I'm not talking on just the offensive end. He's dominating on the defensive end as well, right? Rebounding at an unreal rate, blocking shots, defending the rim, making it hard for teams on the inside. That is what a Detroit center looks like. He brings the energy, brings the physicality, and beats up on other teams in a way that is within the constraints of the game, which makes it even more impressive. But we know who's really been leading the whole pack. Like I said, it's Cade Icewood. Cade Cunningham has been doing his thing and doesn't want all of the notoriety for it. He just wants to go out and win games. He wants to bring the joy of basketball back to the city of Detroit, and he's done a fantastic job doing that so far this season. Looking at some statisticals for individuals and the team. Cade Cunningham leads the team at 27.5 points per game, shooting 43.6% from the field, 9.9 assists per game, which is 3.6 turnovers for Cade Cunningham as well. Basically a double-double for the guy. Jalen Duren shooting 64.7% from the field for 19.4 points per game in just 29 minutes. Cade Cunningham averaging 37 minutes a game. The team is averaging 118.5 points per game, 47.9 rebounds, and 26.2 assists. Jalen Duren leads the team with 12 rebounds, 7.5 defensive rebounds, 4.5 offensive rebounds. Asir Thompson leads the team with 1.8 steals, only 1.4 turnovers in his 30 minutes of play. And then Isaiah Stewart, big guy down low, 2.1 blocks per game, 0.2 steals, 6.7 rebounds. Paul Reed went for 28-13 against the Bulls, keeping the undermanned Pistons on their winning streak. I believe that, let's check in on the power rankings. I can't imagine that the Pistons are anywhere but maybe one or two, because the Pistons are the second-best team. Sorry, I misspoke earlier. The second-best team in the NBA behind the Oklahoma City Thunder. But the Pistons are, in fact, near the top. The Thunder, who are 11-1, remain as the top team in the power rankings. Shea's scoring average across 12 games this season is 33.2. That's third in the league, despite their hot start, despite Jalen Williams missing a few games and several other rotational players missing chunks. They can be credited to their unusual depth. The Nuggets moved up to number two. Excuse me? Why are the Nuggets going ahead of the Pistons here? I mean, yeah, the Nuggets are 8-2. Sure, they've been playing well recently. Sure, they have three-time MVP Jokic, who is playing his preferred brand of offense, operating as a facilitator first, but he still has 25.2 points per game. Doesn't mean they should be ahead of the Pistons. The Pistons are 10-2 now, 9-2 at the time of these last power rankings. Amid the surprising six-game winning streak for the Eastern Conference leading Pistons, they had a major leap from big man Jalen Duren. Obviously, Eastern Conference Player of the Week Cade Cunningham has led into that. Their depth will be tested as they are without Tobias Harris, Isaiah Stewart, Asur Thompson, Jaden Ivey, and others due to injuries. We see that that didn't change anything for them. They went out and handled business regardless of who was putting on a jersey that night. They wanted them to know, hey, first off, it's our city edition debut of our jerseys. Secondly, we're on a 7-game win streak. And thirdly, we don't care who's putting on a jersey. We don't care who is healthy and who isn't. You're here to play basketball, and so are we. So strap them up and let's see who's better. And clearly the Pistons have been better as of recent. The question is, how long will guys like Tobias Harris, Isaiah Stewart, Asur Thompson be out? Taking a look at the injury report, Asur Thompson is day-to-day with an ankle injury. Jalen Duren, day-to-day with an ankle injury. Cade Cunningham, day-to-day with a hip injury. Isaiah Stewart is out with an ankle injury. Tobias Harris has been out for a few games now with an ankle injury, but they say he is trending in the right direction, although his return remains without a timetable. So that's the big question here, is how long are you without some of these stars? It looks like you're going to get Cade Cunningham, Jalen Duren, Asur Thompson back. Almost seems like some load management resting here, which is smart for young, old, anybody in the league. Make sure you have your players playing at their best ability and getting them the proper rest that they need. We'll check back in on the Pistons next week to see if they're able to keep the winning ways going, if they're able to extend this winning streak into double digits, or if it comes to an end early. After the break, we'll be back to talk about another team that's playing inside of Little Caesars Arena, the Red Wings, on 95.3 WBC.